A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow program with Don Hollenbeck. When some people buy gas, they pull up to the pump, say, fill her up, pay the attendant, and drive off. That's buying gas by the gallon. But the true cost isn't by the gallon, it's by the mile. And on that basis, thousands and thousands of car owners from Maine to Florida are finding that the most economical gas they can buy is Amoco gas. For Amoco gas is all petroleum. It all burns. It gives more miles per gallon and costs less per mile. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. President Truman precipitated another row with Congress today when he suggested he will soon renew efforts to get stronger price control powers. He immediately drew some senatorial fire. Cape Heart of Indiana said he dared the president to send along ideas of any new legislation. Let's have it out once and for all, the senator said. Maybank of South Carolina, whose committee originates controls legislation, said he thought the present law ought to have more of a trial, that the officials who are supposed to administer it are making it unworkable by their criticism of it. And Cape Heart said price controls officials have practically invited the automobile industry and other manufacturers to ask for higher price ceilings. Legislation to defeat President Truman's recent order for the dispersal of defense industry was introduced in Congress today by Senator Martin of Pennsylvania, who, with members of Congress from other heavily concentrated industrial areas, see a blow to business in the order. The president said he was issuing the directive in order to present less congested target areas to possible attack, and government agencies were told to encourage such dispersal in granting loans and contracts and fixing tax rates. The president's order was issued under the Defense Production Act, and Senator Martin's legislation today would specifically prohibit such dispersal. Before that act was passed, both the Senate and House had killed legislation sponsored by Senators O'Mahony of Wyoming, Fulbright of Arkansas, and Representative Raines of Alabama, calling for dispersal of future defense plant construction or expansion. Those who support the dispersal policy deny it would inflict hardship on established industrial areas. They say in most instances all that would be required would be to locate new plants a few miles away from existing ones. This difference of opinion over the location of industry deserves some attention. In wartime and in periods of military preparation, a nation's industrial plant expands, and expansion, of course, tends toward decentralization. Since World War II, there's been an industrial boom in the West Coast, in Texas, and in some parts of the South, and senators from those areas generally are felt to be in favor of decentralization, and they would like more of it. They make a note of the fact that since the Korean War began, eight states, mostly in the East, have received 38% of government assistance in industrial expansion, although plant development has continued to decline relatively in New England and the North Atlantic and North Central states. The administration's point in encouraging decentralization is to get the maximum output with maximum safety. But the opposition insists the proper people to decide where industry shall locate are the industrialists themselves. That once you allow the federal government to step in with advice and grants and inducements, you have put industry at the mercy of the bureaucrats. Representative Martin of Massachusetts called President Truman's dispersal plan government by edict, a move toward one-man government. The argument brings to mind something written a few years ago by Robert Oppenheimer in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. It was as follows. If Russia puts most of its industry underground, decentralizes its population, and manufactures atomic bombs, while the United States continues to concentrate its population and industries in cities, the day of world empire may have arrived, and it may not be an American empire. Senator Martin of Pennsylvania also had a word to say today about civil defense. He applauded the action of the House of Representatives in reducing the appropriation for that purpose from $535 million to just over $65 million, and he said this country is already defeated if it starts digging dugouts and ditches now to hide from possible attack. Senator Dirksen of Illinois suggested the nation use a system recently established by the Chicago postal workers. They, he said, are ready for any emergency with their trucks, stretchers, first aid kits, and excellent instruction. For contrast, we have tonight a recorded comment by the man responsible for civilian defense, Administrator Millard Caldwell, former member of Congress and former governor of Florida. Here is what he says.
I think it's time to speak frankly about the situation. The House has failed to meet the needs for a worthwhile civil defense program. The National Civil Defense Advisory Council, made up of outstanding leaders, including governors, mayors, and responsible citizens, says that the public presently doubts the necessity for a civil defense program. Why? because the Congress and the Department of Defense have shown little concern, and the people directly reflect that attitude. The Congress and the military must think this thing through. They must decide whether the nation in the pending crisis needs civil defense. They must decide whether it is essential, and they must say so, clearly and unmistakably. A half-hearted, watered-down acknowledgement of the need for civil defense is ducking the issue and making accomplishment impossible. The people should be told the facts. It's time to stop beating around the bush. The National Council has it stated, if military might alone cannot win the next war, if a prepared public is essential to military success, these facts must be made known now by the Congress and the Department. In no other way can the American people be motivated to sacrifice their time and their effort. The issue should be settled.
Another setback for President Truman today. The Senate Appropriations Committee answered his appeal for the full $115 million appropriation for the Voice of America by voting only $63 million for the year's operations. The House had previously cut the amount to $85 million, and a Senate Appropriations Subcommittee reduced it farther to $56 million, until the full committee today added some on. President Truman had asked for the full budget amount on the ground that the operations of the Voice had become increasingly effective overseas, and he said there must be no slackening in the psychological campaign against communism. The British have given Iran an ultimatum in the oil negotiations: relax the refusal to compromise by noon tomorrow, or accept an end to the discussions and we go home, and there may be serious consequences. Dispatches from London this evening say the government is considering landing military forces at Abadan. Prime Minister Attlee called an emergency cabinet session, and there's now little hope that the talks will end in anything but frustration. Iranian Premier Mossadegh has committed his political future to an intransigent attitude toward Britain. He won't relax an inch in his refusal to permit any sort of British supervision, management, or profit-sharing in the oil fields or refineries. The British have now withdrawn their eight-point proposal, which would turn over all assets of the British-owned Anglo-Iranian oil company to Iranian management, but which would call for a 50-50 split of profits with a British marketing organization and non-profit British management. Prime Minister Attlee has been under strong pressure at home not to yield in this oil dispute. Anglo-Iranian is the world's fourth largest producer, and it is Britain's biggest single overseas investment. There are a number of British warships in the Persian Gulf now, and British air power has been augmented in neighboring Iraq. Nor are the negotiations in Korea going well. The communists have rejected in advance the Allied finding on an alleged violation of the neutrality zone, and they have complained of still one more. Admiral Joy had informed General Nam Il that his investigation did not substantiate the communist charge that Allied troops ambushed and murdered a Chinese patrol leader inside the neutral zone. General Nam replied this was not satisfactory, and he followed up with the accusation that Allied warplanes yesterday bombed a North Korean jeep carrying white flags. The truce subcommittees continue to meet through all this, but without advance, and one Allied officer describes the team on the other side of the table in these words: immune to military logic, obdurate in their politically tainted demands, inscrutable in presenting them, adamant to any adjustment. The Chinese nationalist government today accused its Air Force representative in Washington of failing to account for about $19.5 million, ordered him to come home to Formosa with his assistant and face charges. The representative is General Mao Pang Chu. He had been given the money to buy equipment for Chiang Kai-shek's Air Force and to train its personnel. The Chinese Air Force also announced the dismissal of Mao's executive assistant, ordered him home to Formosa to face charges of dereliction of duty, corruption, and suspicion of being a communist agent. General Mao was also deputy commander-in-chief of the Chinese Air Force, a delegate to the United Nations Military Staff Committee, and has been stationed in Washington for about 8 years. Some particulars of the charge against him: that after the Chinese communists overran the mainland, his delays in buying equipment and gasoline hampered the training and the fighting power of the Air Force on Formosa, that he failed to buy authorized equipment, that he caused one deal to fall through for the purchase of nearly 3 million gallons of gasoline from the city's service oil company. The United States Navy today announced the letting of a contract for the first atomic-powered submarine to Electric Boat Company of Groton, Connecticut. The announcement naturally gave no details, but Congress a year ago authorized the ship's construction, and the Atomic Energy Commission assigned its plant at Arco, Idaho, the job of building a dry land model. Although the final cost of an atomic-powered submarine has never been officially estimated, it's been guessed at in the neighborhood of $60 million, The hull alone for the experimental craft costs $40 million, and that's without the engine. Nor has the Navy ever suggested what performance it might expect from such a ship, although unofficially, Navy men have suggested that speeds of 50 or 60 knots on the surface might be possible. Cadets dismissed from the United States Military Academy at West Point today have been offered free tuition and keep at Notre Dame on the condition that they do not take part in intercollegiate athletics. The offer was made by the Reverend John J. Cavanaugh, president of Notre Dame, who said that anonymous alumnus had expressed willingness to pay the expenses of any one or all of the 90 cashiered cadets at a cost estimated at from $1,350 to $1,400 a year per man. This follows the recent invitation by Cardinal Spellman of New York to the men to enroll at any of the three Catholic men's colleges in the New York Archdiocese. The United States Army today reduced the coffee ration for American soldiers overseas in order to combat black markets. Instead of £4 a month, the European Command Headquarters announces the ration will be £2, effective the 1st of October. In Germany, coffee brings about $2 a pound on the black market, twice the post-exchange price, and the deals have become established practice. The United Press quotes one colonel as saying, "It's just good business. He buys for a dollar, sells for $2. The German gains because otherwise he'd have to spend about $3.50 in a German shop." Another American official says he financed a trip to Paris by his coffee transactions. And still one more makes this cynical observation. Americans in Germany are divided into two classes: those who admit they sell to the black market and those who do not admit it. The State Department today listed the number of nations which have accepted invitations to the Japanese Peace Treaty Conference at San Francisco next month. The figure is 33, with indications that 10 more will send acceptances. Among those delaying are India, the Philippines, Burma, and Indonesia. All of these have some reservations about clauses in the treaty. Czechoslovakia today followed the lead of Russia and Poland and accepted. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with the footnote to the news. Now, here's Bob Dixon.
Believe it or not, science hasn't yet made up its mind as to what causes friction. There are three theories. One, that meshing of rough surfaces causes it. Two, that it results from cohesion of molecules. Three, that there is an electrical attraction between two touching surfaces. But no matter what causes friction, science knows and can prove that proper lubrication means less friction and therefore less wear. The key word there is proper. Not just any kind of lubrication, but proper lubrication. And proper lubrication is what your Amoco man gives you when he services your car with Amoco-approved lubricants. Every wear point gets the exact grade of grease or oil that factory engineers specify. That means that when you drive away, your car is properly lubricated. Lubricated the right way with the right lubricants. Amoco-approved lubricants. No wonder cars given regular Amoco-approved lubrication service last so long and run so well. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
The Senate Finance Committee does not, repeat not, have any plans for putting a tax on neckties. Senator Flanders of Vermont recently jokingly suggested that such a tax might bring in considerable revenue to the government, but enough people took him seriously, wrote him letters, a lot of people, including necktie manufacturers, to oblige Committee Chairman George today to issue a formal denial that such a tax is planned. The American necktie is safe. And that's the footnote to the news.
If you use regular gas, here's a word for you. Use the best of the regulars. Use American gas. It's no ordinary regular. Far from it. American gas is refined by the makers of Amoco gas. American gas is head and shoulders above the regular field. Put it in your car and you'll agree to that before you've driven 5 miles. For American gas, for all famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco oval sign of greater values from Maine to Florida. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is the CBS Radio Network.